I want to welcome everyone to another episode of Keeping It Real with Frankie D, the very first Italian-American podcast and the home of the Italian-American moment. I'm your very proud host, Frankie D, and we can be heard at ItalianAmericanLife.com, on iTunes, Stitcher, your podcast app. Please like us and follow us on all the social media outlets. My guest today is Joe DiMeo from Abruzzo from the Inside. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, Frank, how are you? Thanks so much. I'm honored to be on the show.
I'm so happy to have you. And you are an Abruzzese doing great things for the region of Abruzzo.
Oh, thank you.
Very excited to do this. So you have had a very unique childhood that I understand.
Yes.
You've experienced Italian American life. And this is where the unique part comes in. Italian life, Italian life.
Yes, so absolutely.
I cannot wait for you to tell us all about that, please.
Yeah. So let's see. How do we start? So I was born just outside of Boston, Massachusetts. Both my parents are Abruzzese. So my dad passed away in 2009, but my dad was born in a town outside of Sulmona. People from Abruzzo typically, know Sulmona is as a pretty famous local town. Even I would guess, even if you're from different parts of Italy, you would know Sulmona because of
why do we know it? Tell me.
Confetti production.
La città dei confetti.
La città dei confetti, exactly. So my dad was born in Prezza, which is basically about a 15-minute drive. Prezza was known, just to give you a little bit of history as we go along here, Prezza was known as being the first borgo, the first hamlet, whatever you want to call it, back in the day, in the year 800, to build a castle. Now, unfortunately, the castle, there are some remnants of it, but it doesn't exist anymore. And it's unfortunate because to have that standing as being the first castle in the Valle Peligna, overlooking Sulmona, the valley that Sulmona's in, that's where my dad was born. So 50 minutes from Sulmona. My maternal side was born on the other side of the Maiella in a town called Lettovalena, which unfortunately had... it doesn't exist anymore. The old town no longer exists simply because during World War II, it just happened to find itself on the Gustav Line, or the what was known as the Winter Line. And that was basically on the north side were the Germans, that was the Axis powers, and on the south side were the Allied forces coming in. And unfortunately, my grandparents' town had a critical bridge that linked the two. And, back in 1943, there was mayhem there. But anyways, those are things we can talk about whenever you'd like to explore that. That's a whole podcast in and of itself. But basically, those are my two links to Abruzzo. At the age of seven,
ask you one quick question.
So
right outside of Boston, was this an Italian-American area that you were born into?
Yeah, so pretty much. I mean, Boston has deep roots with the Italian. A lot of people, immigrated to Boston. My grandfather. I don't know exactly. I should ask my aunt. My grandfather, my paternal grandfather, came to Boston, and I think it might have been sometime between the mid-50s to like 1958. But he did not come with his family. He came here to establish himself. He was living in the North End. His brother Domenico was the first one to come here prior to that. And he basically got himself settled, made some money. And at one point in December of 1961, my grandmother, my father, his two sisters, they came, they settled in the North End for just about 8-9 months, and then they moved to Somerville, which was a suburb. Now, to put things into context, that wasn't typical of that time. Normally, people would stay in the North End for quite some time, and then eventually they would go into the suburbs. That would have happened later in life. But my grandfather was a hard worker, and he was resolute and focused, and he did what he had to do. And they moved to a place called Somerville, Massachusetts, which is just basically north of the city. I was born in Medford, which is just a little bit the next town over from Somerville. And It was one of those things where how do I put it? It was incredible to grow up where I did. You know, Boston, the Boston of the 70s, you know, and for that matter of the 80s, was a very different place. For anybody who visits Boston today, it's a very clean, cosmopolitan, world-class city. When I was growing up there, it was gritty, it was dirty. You know, there were some areas that were okay, but for the most part, it was a very different place than it is right now. But yeah, so I had the luck of, you know, I think about this often, and I say, goodness, you know, first of all, as humans, we could have been born anywhere in the world. So, you know, first of all, I say I'm so incredibly fortunate to have been born, or just to live a life in such a wonderful place, both in Italy and the United States. But you know, particularly Boston, because Boston's a center of education, biotech, like everything you could possibly imagine, culture. This is the cradle of US civilization here for, well, I shouldn't say modern, the I'm not phrasing right. You'll have to edit that one
No,
out.
no worries. No worries.
Boston is the birthplace of America, basically, of modern America, I should say. And yeah, just overall, very, very lucky to have been part of the experience here, and the fact that my grandfather picked Boston to emigrate to.
Now,
So,
was it because there's a lot of Abruzzese people in that area?
yeah, there's everybody. There's Avellinese. There's Sicilians. There's you know, as you know, there aren't many people, you know. Most of the immigration here was from, you know, central, south central, down that right down the boot. You don't really I rarely find anybody who's north of Rome, you know, just to give you a quick little example. Every once in a while I bump into somebody, and it, like one person I knew, and we're talking now. You get a lot of people coming from all over Italy, people who study come here from Milano, Torino, all those places. But back in the day, you just didn't hear about that.
Exactly. No,
Just because, you know,
it's a different immigrant today. You're 100%.
it is
I mean, at
exactly.
least
So,
our experience here in Chicago, quite a few that come now are from Northern Italy, highly educated, specifically coming for work.
exactly.
They tend to, in Chicago, they work downtown Chicago. They live downtown Chicago. They really don't, they really aren't exposed to like what's our Italian American community here in Chicago. So,
Right. And to a certain extent, I don't even think, you know, I hate saying this out loud, but you know, there's a certain mentality to the new Italian immigrant as well, that they're just not understanding of the Italian American thing, because it really is its own thing. Like I look at my life, and although I am Italian American or American Italian, I was born here. I have very deep roots to the culture. I went to school in Italy. I learned how to eat like an Italian, how to live like an Italian, how to appreciate the culture, the history, the people, because I lived in Italy. Here it's a different flavor. The Italian American culture, I guess it's sort of all, it always gets boiled down to that, you know, the Sopranos, the mafiosos, and all that stuff, which is unfortunate. You know, there
we
are
could talk
still,
about that for
oh
6 minutes
yeah, I mean, yeah, there
easily.
are so many characters out there that are third, fourth generation out, and they're still dressing a certain way and talking a certain way, and they're to a certain extent, I don't know how much of it is really who they are, or it's their way of linking themselves to something.
Right.
You know, one interesting story over the years, and this is something I think people have come to the realization over time. You have the children of immigrants would come here, and you know, maybe they spoke dialect at home, and they thought they spoke Italian. And suddenly, I've heard this story many times. They go back to Italy with their parents on a vacation, and they realize what they've been speaking has been their local flavor of dialect, and you know, people don't understand what they're saying unless you're from that area. So it in incredible. Just incredible experience overall. And you can slice and dice this in so many different ways.
Without a doubt, and let me just leave my little 2 cents on the point of you're right. I think the Italian immigrant of today that as I explained, is the makeup doesn't really get to know, understand an Italian American. Sometimes, a lot of times it's our fault. I get the difference. I get what an Italian coming from Milano thinks when they see some of the things that our Italian Americans put out there. And it's unfortunate. I'm not trying to be an Italian American snob. I'm an Italian American. I'm very proud to be it. But we are sometimes going in the wrong direction the way we portray ourselves. And it keeps getting perpetuated and perpetuated and perpetuated. And it's sad because it's at times it's actually outright embarrassing. And I could see where an Italian doesn't want to associate with that. And it's unfortunate because I wish we were brought closer together instead of being pulled farther apart.
Of course,
having said
of course.
That, I don't even want, you know, that's enough on that. I want to hear about the childhood of Joe DiMaio.
Sorry, that's my fault. You're going to have to edit that.
No. That's all part of who we are. It's part of Italian America, and that's okay. It's good to talk about it. You know where I think it's bad, Joe? That it's never discussed. It's never talked about. I mean, we have national groups that I think they go with this younger group of people that put out this embarrassing stuff because they have followers and they get likes. And that's what it's all about, the almighty follower, because the almighty follower produces dollars. And it's unfortunate because they're perpetuating bringing us down as a group of people. Where you know and I know we are very lucky to come from this incredible group of people over the course of 2,000 years history. But unfortunately, it's being portrayed to the public, to the American public, and to the young Italian American, be it fourth generation, fifth generation, that this is what we are. Talking in a stupid way and bringing up stupid things and not even the crime thing, because the crime thing now is decades ago, although that's still part of it, but it's just a lot of just talking stupid and, you know, and it saddens me. And it saddens me really when I see like our national leaders and sometimes for me, local leaders here in Chicago that condone this and kind of jump on their bandwagon because like I said, it will produce followers and likes. And
yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah. It's one of those things, you know, on the other hand, you know, there's also this part of it. And this is interesting. I did another podcast interview a little while back where we talked about my Boston accent. Obviously you don't hear it right now, just because over the years I've learned to own it to be normal, but you know, if you want me to talk like I'm a guy from Boston here, there ain't no problems, you know, we can go there, but you know, and that came with a certain stigma. But ultimately, I remember when I was a young person, I went to Boston University and it was like September of 1991. And I realized I had a Boston accent and I spoke a certain way. So I tried honing it and turning it into something that, you know, I could be a more marketable person post-college. But then as the years went by, and this is related to the Italian-American thing, I started realizing that, you know what, there's nothing wrong with the Boston accent. It's part of the culture, the way of being here in Boston. It's part of the neighborhoods, the way things were set up here and the different neighborhoods and the different immigrants that came in and everybody spoke a certain way. So in a way, even though we might say, oh goodness, the Italian American population portrays themselves a certain way, some people really are that way. So to a certain extent, they just need to be respected for the way they are. That's how it, because somebody is two, three generations removed and they learned instead of saying, you know, prosciutto, they're saying the prosciutto, that's who they are. And then that's okay. If that's all they know, that's quite okay. You know, again, it goes back to, you know, perhaps the way that the media portrays them, whatever the case might be. But anyways, yeah, let's get back on track. Forgive me for going.
No. So, I enjoy so talking about it all.
Yeah. So at the
but
age
I want to hear
seven,
about when you moved to Italy.
Yeah. So at the age of seven, so my father was sort of, he was this like entrepreneurial guy that tried everything. He never, I hate to say it, but he never really succeeded in one thing. But he sort of took us along for this ride. And one of those rides was he decided he wanted to go back to Italy. And as a matter of fact, let me rewind. My father decided to go work for Shell Oil in Venezuela in 1979. And he was going to do a few years there. That was a time that was very prosperous. They were looking for people to work on the oil rigs. And my father had a background in construction, among many other things. So he went to Venezuela, and my mom, and my brother went to Sulmona. That's what was decided. It was all very last minute. I went to Italy in the summer of 79 with my mother and brother, as we normally did. My father always stayed home and worked, and we went on vacation practically every summer to Italy. We hopped on a plane, came back home, and then it was decided that, oh, I guess we're going to Italy and we're going to stay there. So we hopped back on a plane, went back to Italy, and in September of 1979, I started second grade. I was thrown into the class.
And what was that like? What was your level of the language to go to school?
Yeah, well, I understood just because I would go there every summer, and my mom spoke Italian to me, and so did my grandparents every summer that I went back to Italy. But of course, on a grammatical level, it was a challenge. But I vividly remember that day. I remember walking in. I was a very, very self-conscious, shy kid, and I sat at the desk, and suddenly all the kids came up to me. L'americano. So the interesting thing is, in Italy, I'm the American. In America, I'm the Italian. So this, I will never shed this ever in my life. So I get to class early that day. My mother dropped me off, introduced me to the teacher and all that, and then people started filing in. And suddenly, everybody came around. I just started crying. I was so overwhelmed. I was like, "What's going on here?" Interestingly enough, on that day, my who. The people who were to become my lifelong friends, I still talk to today, they decided for me. One of the things I remember about that day is almost instantly they decided for me who my favorite soccer team was going to be. So back in the day, the two really pop, well, three popular teams were Milan, Inter, and Juventus. And I became a Juventus fan on that day. And that never changed. Never because I wanted to become a Juventus fan, just because they said, okay, you're going to be a Juventus fan. I'm like, all right, cool. That sounds good. So, an interesting thing. But, anyways, yeah, I started on that day. And, I don't remember struggling with the language. I remember starting school and just doing my thing. And, I assimilated pretty quickly. And again, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that, my parents spoke Italian at home. It wasn't that that far of a stretch for me to kind of absorb all that. And then the other part of it too, when you're 7 years old, I mean, we're how do I put this? We're incredibly we're able to adapt to anything when you're a kid.
That's a
Generally
good
speaking,
statistic.
yeah, you really do. So even when I talk to other fellow parents, my kids are now almost 20 and 23 years old. But anytime that, was a chance, an opportunity for a change or something, not that they ever experienced any of the changes I dealt with. Their life has been, for the most, aside from dealing with divorce, their life has been pretty,
Stable.
everything's been fine. But I think back at those days, the going back and forth, going to Italy, then coming back, having to relearn English when I got back here and all that. And I got through it okay. Everything was fine. There's some funny stories along the way with language. Not so much going to Italy. When I went to Italy, I just remember going to school and starting to go to school, and that just kind of became my thing. When I
But you
came back
adapted
here in
very well.
84, I had forgotten a lot of my English, and that was some funny stories to talk about with that. But yeah, so September of 79, I start school, and I'm so incredibly thankful because I had such an incredible experience and relationship with my grandparents, particularly my maternal grandparents, Nonno Arduino. And Arduino is a very particular name. You don't hear that often. And my nonna, her name was Maria Nicola, which interesting too, because Nicola is a man's name, but her full name was Maria Nicola. And Nonno was a very stoic person. You know, fought in World War II. He was a carabiniere, which is part of one of the police forces, sort of military slash police forces in Italy to this day. He was a maresciallo, which is, you know, basically one of the highest ranks before you could before he retired, and he retired at a young age. I'm 52 right now, and I think by 51 he was already retired. And you know, he was a stoic man. He was a provider. You know, with the fact that my dad wasn't around, you know, they became part of what was missing with my dad not being there. And my grandmother was an incredibly loving person, and I have fond memories. And these memories date back to even while I was living here. When we go back in the summertime, I remember arriving at the airport. My grandfather would be waiting for us, and he had a little red car. It was called the Prinz, which is which was a German car. This little tiny thing. My grandfather did not drive over 10 miles an hour. He was the slowest driver. Rome, Sulmona would take, you know, 75 days to get there. He wouldn't roll the windows down because he was afraid that the air was going to give him some sort of disease, or he's going to catch a cold or a cough. So here we are arriving in summer, and I'm sure you remember cars used to have the little triangles in the front that you could open up
Yes.
for a little bit of air. And those are the only things he would allow. But even those, you could only open them maybe like a few inches. And so if you can visualize this, my brother and I have our mouths up against these things trying to get air as we're traveling to Sulmona for an incredibly long time to get there. So, but anyways, we would arrive at my grandparents' house, and I remember walking in and just, you know, the smells of my grandmother's sauce, and, you know, the pasta, and, you know, she used to grate the Parmigiano cheese, and it just the prezzemolo, the basil, the smell in the air. And then over time, you know, one of my fondest memories now is Nonna would ask me, could you go to the garden and pick me some prezzemolo, some parsley, some lavazza nigola, which is basil. And I would go to the garden. And to this day, Frank, there isn't one moment that goes by if I don't go to the supermarket. The second I smell basil or parsley, I am brought back to those years, you know, 74, 75, 76, 77, 78. All those memories are going into the garden, and Nonna's the one who taught me how to pick the basil to make sure you pluck it from the top so the plant still, you know, grows. So on Sundays, they would always take us into the mountains. You know, my brother and I suffered from motion sickness, so we would try to avoid being in the car. My grandfather going, you know, 10 miles an hour, going up into the mountains and just these winding roads, we would just get so car sick. So we decided at one point, hey, we're going to take the train. They used to have a train that they used to go and hit all the mountain towns. Me, my mom, my brother, and my grandmother would hop on the train and head to the location. My grandfather would meet up with us. And it would be places for those of you listening that are familiar with Abruzzo. You know, we would go to Campo di Gioia was our location. That's the place where we stop, and we would meet my grandfather there about an hour later, an hour and a half, however long it took to get there. But the journey was amazing. My brother and I would play on the train, and you know, that old-fashioned chug of the plane, hitting the railroad tracks at every joint where the joints came in on the tracks. There was a certain smell associated with it and all that. And then, you know, my nonna, nonna, nonna would prepare pasta and put it in a bowl, and, you know, put a dish over it, and then get a rag over it and tie it up, and bring tomatoes and cucumbers. And we would have a picnic, and we had this cool little fold-out table with seats. And we would just, my grandfather had this thing where he would pick the strangest spot to have a picnic. Like, you know, he we say, like, why here? Like, there's all these other great places. But he was kind of a loner in a way. He was a very gracious guy, but he didn't like being around anybody. I'm kind of the same way. And so if I have my choice, I kind of will be in the corner, even though I'm very extroverted. I'm an ambivert, but For the most part, you can find me as a pretty quiet guy until you engage me, then I'm fine. But my grandfather would pick these locations to have picnics, and to this day we laugh about it. It's like, why there? I mean, at one point we're like right near the road, just because it was quiet and nobody was there. He was afraid if he went to the main area, other people would gather, especially
Right.
during the summertime, and then we'd have other people around us. So, anyways, interesting stuff. But
So your experience was 5 years living
yeah, I
there?
was there for 5 years, and Frank, it felt like 20 years. I mean, I can't believe. I mean, 5 years flies by, especially now that we're older. I mean, 5 years is a drop in the bucket. 5 years as a child, I felt like I was there for 20 years. And let's put aside the fact that the most incredible experience in my life was having my children and experiences with them. Let's just toss them aside for a moment. Those years were so the texture, the flavor, the understanding. I still know, I don't know how to explain it. The fact that I was from like 7 years old to almost 13 years old living, I have such deep connected memories to those years that I don't think I experienced, aside from my children, I don't think I've ever experienced anything like that. I don't think I ever will experience that again. And I don't know what it is. It was simply, was
Was it,
that?
I have to ask, was it like, so the day when, they said, we're going to move back to America, to Boston, was that like a major disappointment?
Well, let me tell you something. Without getting too deeply into it, with my dad's craziness, I literally got out of school one day. My grandfather picks me up. I never even made it back to the house. They're like, "Oh, you guys are going back to America." And literally got in
Right.
the car. We ended up going to Milano for about a week or so to be with my uncle, my aunt, and my uncle, who lived there, my mother's brother. And then we moved back here. So it was part, without getting into the craziness of my father's ways, it was insane, quite honestly. So suddenly I go to school one morning, and that was the last time I went to school. Next thing you know, I land in the United States a week later, and we ended up moving into my grandmother's house. She had a two-family house in Somerville, the place that they settled in for basically the entire time they lived here. And then they signed me up for St. Joseph's Catholic School in Medford. And I remember it was right around Halloween time, and I remember hanging out at the front steps of the school, just waiting to be introduced to the class. And yeah, that was October. It happened. And we returned here in October 24th of 1984. But this year will make 40 years, which I simply can't believe it's been that long. And yeah, so I was reintroduced into the American school system, Catholic, and I
Had
walk
to be
in.
very difficult for you, and it definitely had to be.
Yeah, I don't process it that way. Again, I think it comes down to the resiliency. That's the word I was looking for before. I think children have a certain resiliency. And even though like I said, my father's ways brought stress to the family. There's no doubt about that. But I don't know. Maybe it's just the way I'm hardwired. I've never let anything beat me down. Doesn't matter how bad life has gotten or whatever the experiences are. I just keep trekking along. I'm a
That's a good trait
joker.
to have.
Yeah, no, I'm very fortunate. I'm a guy that I'm always trying to find the comedic lining to everything, and I think it's carried me through my life. So, to a certain extent, I'm really thankful for that. But yeah, I was thrown back into the class, and all of a sudden, here's the Italian. Oh, there's an Italian kid in class. So I was like, oh, here we go. This sounds familiar. The only interesting part about it here, I definitely remember my challenges with the English language, because you leave at 7 years old and you don't speak anymore. Suddenly, we didn't speak. I took English classes in Italy when I was a kid, but
It's not the same, right?
yeah, it's just not the same. So suddenly we're here, and I was really good at spelling, though. And I'll tell you why. Italian is a very phonetic language, Like if you have a word like, I don't know, casa, CASA, I mean, ex whatever it sounds like, That's the way you pronounce it. There's really, it's not a, America, PH and the, is it F with the letter F, or is it F with the PH sound, and so many different variations of things, words that sound the same, homonyms, I guess they call them. And so when I got here, I was able to look at a word, and the way I would, this is my first memory of I finished second to last at the spelling bee qualifiers for all the classes, just because I would be able to look at a word and I would say to myself with an Italian pronunciation. So somebody comes to a little kid in the States and says, "How do you spell beautiful?" Goodness, I think every kid misspelled the word beautiful. In my mind, I would go, "Oh, beautiful." So I would basically beautiful, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I know how to spell that." So they were blown away that I could spell that. But then during reading class, we would read, and there were some words I had no clue how to pronounce them. I had to read out loud, and at one point, one of the words was a yacht, and I called it a yacht, and the whole class just burst out laughing. To this day, I have one of my friends, John, who says, "Oh, you just said yacht. That was hilarious." I was like, "Yeah, that's, I don't know what I'm saying." So,
Yeah, no, definitely. But
Oh, I got to tell you one story
yes,
before I
please.
forget. I'm sorry. Sister Lorraine's English class. Okay. And this has more to do with the mentality of the times. We were doing English class, and she said, "Boys and girls, I'm going to read a sentence. And when I'm done reading it, if whatever issue you find with that sentence, something might be incorrect, grammar, verbs, anything, you raise your hand." So the sentence was, "Sarah is the captain of the soccer team." And guess what Joe DiMeo does? He raises his hand. "I know this one." Now, mind you, throughout that whole time period, every time I thought I knew the answer, I would have to think of it in Italian, translate it to English, deal with the fact that I was at the age I was at, where I was very self-conscious. So by the time I was ready to answer anything, 3 hours had gone by. It was way too late. So at this one, this answer, I knew. I raised my hand. I said, I know Sarah can't be the captain of the soccer team because she's a girl." That's what I said in class. I got detention that day because of saying that. Sister Lorraine was so, she called me a male chauvinist. On that day, I learned what the word male chauvinist
Was just
was.
going to say that you probably didn't even know what that
I had
meant.
no idea. So male chauvinist became the word of the day.
Oh my
And
Lord.
I laugh now, but that, I mean, that's what, I mean, growing up in Italy, I didn't play soccer with girls. It just wasn't part of, girls didn't play sports.
Right.
Eventually that would change, but I laugh at it today because
Oh, that's a good story.
that's a statement about a moment in time and an attitude in living in a certain country with certain values, whatever you want to call it. And that's
Sure.
what it translated into me. And I was like, "Oh, okay. I
Oh,
guess
definitely.
it's
Definitely.
different here in America.
Absolutely.
Girls can be captains,
Yes.
and they can be mayors, and it can be presidents, and all that
President.
kind of stuff." So,
Absolutely. So, but Abruzzo is in your heart. It stayed with you forever. And then you started something called Abruzzo from the inside. Please tell us what that exactly is.
So Abruzzo from the inside. It's mostly a Facebook project. I started it, goodness, now what, maybe about 4 years ago. I'm not sure exactly when, but it was basically a place for me to kind of post some of my photos and just kind of keep some of my memories in check, because you can imagine we're getting older, and at some point, stuff that was, you had more focus and you remembered certain stories. If you're not talking about them, you tend to forget. The details start vanishing. So I said, "Oh, let me start putting some of this stuff down." Facebook was incredibly accessible. Even at that point, I said, "Facebook is going nowhere. If anything, it'll be a place, a resource that I might have some of my family join me, post a few photos, a few thoughts, a few ideas." By then, I had connected with some of my friends. Facebook brought me back together with my friends from school in Italy and all that. Yeah, interesting. Through Facebook, we ended up having a reunion, our fifth grade reunion. We had in some of them I hadn't seen in 30 years. It was amazing. Went back to Italy. It was 2016, I think. Yeah, and we had a wonderful. We went out to eat, and it was so great to see everybody. But anyway, so I put this project together, and it's interesting. I started it for me and just for a few people, for my brother, for my mother to look at, and also sort of to have this thing for my kids, because when you kid, my kids were, they're a little bit older now, but I think kids just need to get older. I'm a big believer in until you live something and you have some distance, you just don't get it, So I can sit there and tell my kids till I'm blue in the face about this and that. I'm sure they're listening and they do, but they have their own lives to live. I'm gonna guess at some point when they're 30, 40, or in the day I'm not around anymore, they're going to be like, oh, probably learn a little bit more about my heritage or, what my dad was all about. I wasn't as receptive to what he talked about. So I figured, hey, maybe something like this would help. And Frank, I don't know how, but within a few years, now I'm up to almost 1,700 followers, and they're Abruzzese folks from all over the world, Australia, South America, obviously North America, the States, Canada. And I've learned more about me through my interactions with these people. Just when I go back to Italy, one of the issues I've been having is that how much time, effort, and because at the end of the day, it's also money. It's you got to pay for the streaming services, everything that you do to make it professional. So now I'm kind of in limbo. What direction do I go with it? Because I'm incredibly satisfied by the work I do on there because I get to connect with all Abruzzesi all over the world.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't you do a lot of like live videos while
Oh,
you
absolutely. So
were
yeah. So in
eating?
essence, what it turned into is every time I go back to Italy, every time I go back to Abruzzo, which has practically been every year for the last 4 or 5 years, every time I go back, I explore Abruzzo. And the fact that I'm going there to explore, at first it was more about showing people the areas that I grew up in. And I'm a mountain kid. I love the mountains. People say, oh, you need to go to more of the coast. And I say, you're absolutely right. I need to make this more of an objective project. I need to explore the coast and all that. But I love the mountains. What can I tell you? I'm a mountain kid. That's right. Interestingly enough, we used to complain with my grandfather. It's like, you take us to the same places all the time. Wishing we can go somewhere else. And now when I go back, I go to those same places that I complained about because they're etched into my soul. But yeah, so when I go back, I go live, I hit a few different towns and I talk about things, whether it's a memory, something I did as a child, memories of my grandparents. I'll go back to Lettopalena, which was destroyed by the Germans. The new town is built up the hill. Because the people, once the war was over, they took all of the remnants from the, so in a nutshell, the Germans went in and in 1943 towards the end of the year, and because of that bridge that connected sort of let's say north and south on the Gustav line, they decided that was a critical point that needed to be destroyed. So my grandmother always talked about the story. She was home. And suddenly the Germans came in, they pulled her out, her kids, Michele and Agata were playing outside and she had no idea where they were. And they basically gathered them together. And what they would eventually do is they mined everything, houses, bridge, everything. And they blew up the town. That was it, just like that. So, and I'm telling you that story just to get, deep and emotional about this for a moment. But anytime I've gone through any, personal strife or problems or things that I think are difficult. I really remember those days when my grandmother would talk about it. And, I think everything is relative in life. You need contrast to understand yourself, to understand how your situation, what your experience is relative to somebody else's. Because ultimately, you can say, listen, oh, I'm feeling horrible because I have a cold. And you talk to another person who has cancer, you're like, oh my God, I shouldn't be complaining right now. So, yeah, my grandmother taught me a lot about it. She didn't, she never really told, she just, she taught me about life and stories. And a lot of those stories, to go back to the Abruzzo experience, Or stories about the war, about World War II. I mean, she lost her dad when she was 3 years old. My great grandfather Antonio died it would have been 1915 or so, 1915, 1916. And I just discovered through my passion for this project that he actually died in, was it Slovenia? I found his records. So online, somehow I found out his death records that he died in Slovenia during World War I, and things that none of my family members even knew. They had no idea where he was buried. So that's where he is. So hopefully one day I can go there. But in any event, yeah, it's, forgive me, I lost train. I think I started going down the multiple roads here with my answers. Your original
What I was
question.
going to say is, I think it's wonderful. Like when you would do these live videos,
Yeah.
you're bringing Abruzzo to a huge amount of people that have never been there.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Never go, may never be able to, or never think to do this trip. So that was great. I think you brought.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a realization I had later on. Cause at first I did it for myself. Then I realized, oh, I'm connecting with people who actually, there's a certain age segment that, you know, people actually live that kind of my older people. Like I consider myself generally, there probably aren't many, not many, too many people that are my age that kind of went through that transition. Most people are older, like my parents' generation that came to the States in the, you know, maybe 50s, 60s, 70s, settled here, and that was that. And then never went back other than for vacationing and stuff like that. But I had this very, you know, particular situation happen with me. So at some point I started thinking to myself, goodness, these folks. So if I were the child, let's say my parents never brought me back to Italy, I would have experienced none of this. So maybe at some point I would have been like, oh, wow, Abruzzo from the inside is a wonderful resource to get a sense for what it was like to live there. Or, you know, who are my people? Because, you know, the region of Abruzzo goes back to the Stone Age. And again, these are things that I learned because suddenly I had this project called Abruzzo from the Inside. I needed to be a little bit more cerebral about it. And when I talked about something, it's one thing to constantly talk about your same experience. Oh, when I was a kid, I did this and nonno did that. And my father did this and my mom did that. And I ate this over here. But suddenly I had to put a little bit of context and understand with the history behind the area. And our area has been around since the stone people, you know, cavemen, really. And I didn't realize that until maybe two and a half years ago. And, it's great to be able to show, and I get this a lot from the folks that are, multi-generational, like in Australia. I get so many messages. The Australians are most definitely the most involved in the group. They constantly get in
That's
touch
right.
with me and reach out to me and all that. And I'm so appreciative of them. Of course, everybody is, but for one reason or another, the Australians really, really are connected to me. And, you know, you might have people who, I shouldn't say you might have, there are folks that reach out to me that have very faint memories, whether it's a grandparent, a parent, whether they're, you know, depending on how old they are, and they never lived there. Some people have never gone there. Just recently they went to visit, and my project is there to give them a little bit of a flavor of what it might have been like to live there.
Absolutely.
The experiences that defined the Abruzzese experience for me and for them, so that they can better understand the land that their parents, grandparents, great-grandparents came from. So I started seeing that the project generally just took on a whole different dimension. And it feels so good to be able to do something like that.
Where are you thinking to go with it?
What's that?
Where are you thinking to go with this entire?
Well, you know,
I know you.
So this is the interesting part. I haven't been on the page in a month, and I'm embarrassed to say that. Sometimes I need distance from something to really think and reflect on it. I love my region, but now lately, every time I've gone back, You know, and now I've remarried since. And when I go back to Abruzzo, it's one of those things where, you know, I was there with my daughter this past October. We had a wonderful time. She had been there when she was just 3 years old, actually not even 3 years old. So sure, for practical purposes, she was never there because she doesn't remember it. Now that she's almost 23 years old, we were there this fall. And, you know, it was amazing for me to say, Sophia, this is where I went to school. These are my friends. She met my one, you know, she met some of my best friends. You know, this is where I had my first communion. This is the texture, the texture. I'm a big texture guy. You know, every time I go back to Italy, particularly in Abruzzo, I'm always touching the walls and the stones and going, wow, this has been here for a really long time. I mean, to the point where you could blindfold me, you know, throw me in a room for a year and then all of a sudden drop me somewhere and say, figure out where you are. I could touch a wall and be like, oh, this is Sulmona. I know where I am. Well, not necessarily Sulmona, but I know
Right, right. That's very
I'm in
interesting.
an old world. Yeah. And so Sophia has that experience with her, you know, and she's you know, she's been able to experience, both my kids have been able to experience my life through my stories and through my words and all that. But ultimately, it's great to have somebody actually have their feet on the ground, you know, boots on the ground, understanding you need to be connected to your land. You know, it's the same thing. I traveled to Ireland a few years ago with my wife, and you know, I was dying to go to Belfast. I've always been a student of history. I studied international relations in college. So, you know, there was always a deep link between diplomacy and history and all that. And I was like, I need to go to Belfast. I want to see what this, the troubles, what this is, what is this all about? Because my understanding of it was always through books or reading or, you know, all those movies that came out in the 90s about the IRA and the terrorists and all that. Suddenly we land in Belfast. And I was just so enthralled with the people there. I spoke to the Protestants, I spoke to the Catholics, and I really got a real sense for what the history was through people, just simply people talking to me about it. And I was able to put things in the context and understand that it's still an issue today. I thought it was a thing of the past, but they still have issues on many levels, politically, socioeconomically, all of that. So it's the same thing. You take that and you apply that to Abruzzo. And I tell people on the project, listen, it doesn't matter if you're from Abruzzo or not. If you're watching this project, this show, whatever you want to call that, I do live, I do photographs, I do a little bit of everything. I said, if you're from somewhere else in the world, then you need to connect with your roots. Have the show be the inspiration to do that. If you're watching this and this inspires you, you don't have to be from Abruzzo to enjoy what I do on Abruzzo from the inside. It's all about seeking our roots,
Sure.
really.
Oh, no, definitely. And
Yeah. So.
you're a tremendous representative for the region. You're a great ambassador, if you will, for the region of Abruzzo.
I
That
would, yeah. People say that to me.
I don't think
Yeah.
it's not as I don't want to say as well known, but it's not one of the regions maybe that comes to mind for your average American, let's say.
No, not at all. Not at all. So going back, you originally asked me, you know, where do you want to go with this? So that was, sorry, I tend to be a little ADD with my answers,
Oh,
but
no worries.
I get to the point now where I say, goodness, every time I go back to Abruzzo, I'm tied to this project. And to a certain extent, you know, as I'm 52 now, if I go back by myself, I can say, okay, I can do this. But when I go back with my mom, I go back with my wife, I went back with my daughter. You know, I felt like I had to justify to everybody, say, listen, I'm here with my daughter. You know, in the past, I would just everywhere I went, I was going live, photography, posting, feelings, emotions. It turned out to be a lot of work. That doesn't scare me because I like doing that kind of work, but it takes away from my personal experience with the people I'm with there, because my mind is all, I'm a creative. I'm a photographer, videographer, I'm a musician. That's where I'm always looking at things through the creative side of things. And at some point, you know, I told my daughter, listen, I'm going to do my best to focus on the fact that this is just our vacation, but there's always that pull to do what I do. I'm assuming it's the same thing, like a journalist or an anchor on TV has their link to journalism. That becomes their life, and their family takes, second seat to that. Not that I'm at that level, but just a simple little example. At some point you go back and that becomes what you love doing, but it takes away from the personal experience with the people who surround you. So I'm at a point right now where I say, okay, when do I do this? How do I do this? And then there's always that fervor and that like excitement when I get there to do it. But then when I get back to the States, I have a family to take care of. I have business to do. And how much of what I do becomes Abruzzo to the point where when I get there, I automatically get into business mode. I thought about opening up a bed and breakfast there. I'm still working on a website for, just fun stuff that promotes the Abruzzo region, of t-shirts and hats. And at one point I thought about doing a store where people could buy, olive oil from certain areas. Yes, I do want to make money, but it was more of an issue for me to go to a local person and say, listen, how many bottles of olive oil can you provide me with? Is it only 15? All right, I'm going to make your olive oil available and only 15 bottles can be purchased. I'm not interested in mass production. I'm interested in somebody saying, you know what? I want a bottle of oil from the hometown of Brezza, like my dad's hometown. They make great olive oil. And obviously it's not going to be cheap, but if you're a person who's craving the flavor of a certain area, maybe you can go on the website and buy it.
Well, I think that's a great idea. And I think people love that because you would provide an opportunity for them to purchase this olive oil from Prezza that they're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, otherwise. No, exactly.
I think that's a great idea. How do people find you, follow you? How do they do that?
Generally, if you go to Facebook, you just look for Abruzzo from the inside, all one word. On Instagram, it's the same thing, Abruzzo from the inside. Although I'm not really, I post on Instagram, but not that often. If anybody ever wants to reach out to me directly, they can just do abruzzofromtheinside@gmail.com. And that's it. I guess in a nutshell, it's a constant ebb and flow with the project with me. Like I haven't been on in a month and I'll go on and I'll just post a bunch of stuff. I still have photos and videos that I haven't uploaded from my trip there in October, but
in a way, Joe, I can definitely relate to you being, I have a podcast and that I do these Italian American moments, which are like 1 minute videos. When I went to Italy in May, I am the same thing. I'm thinking about, hey, this could be an opportunity for a moment or maybe I make a contact for a podcast. And you're thinking of that while you're really on vacation. So I get it. And you're also with my podcast and everything, like how much am I really, devoting to it? Because I mean, my podcast and everything, it's just what I do. I do it because I love it. It's not
monetary
wise. It costs me money to do it, but I love to do it. It's from my heart, as I could, obviously you could see this is from your heart. So I definitely relate to you. You are, like I said earlier, you're a great ambassador for Abruzzo. Your heart is there. You're knowledgeable. You represent it quite well. So in a selfish point of view, I hope you keep doing it because I think it's just great. And people need to know about Abruzzo and also the, like I said earlier, the fourth, the fifth generation that is of Abruzzese origin that is virtually clueless about what Abruzzo is and will never go there and really has no idea about it. You offer an opportunity for them to learn. So I think that's just wonderful.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I appreciate that you feel that way. It's, it's important. I don't think I'll ever let it go. Again, it just, I think it's going to happen in spurts. It's just the way it is.
I get it.
So, for what it's worth, just to give you a bigger picture, my life has changed drastically this year with some different things that have gone on with me with work and just, now I find myself, I still work in real estate, but telecom was the real moneymaker for me. That's all ended. And now I'm in a point where I have a creative agency called DeMeo Creative. I do photography, videography, promotional products, printing stuff that this is something I did when I was in college. So I've kind of come full circle. But my real passion, I run another project called Inside Street Photography, which is me really traveling the world doing what I love doing. And to a certain extent, it's also that balance between, okay, Abruzzo, I love it dearly, but I also have this other thing that I like doing, particularly as I get older. I love traveling the world. I love going to places that I've never been to before. So I have this inside street photography aspect of it that's doing very well. My podcast is listened to in like 41 countries. It's doing incredibly well. And I get to connect with different people of all walks of life. I mean, to be able to connect with people on any given day, that it's the same thing with the Abruzzo thing. You know, you get messages from Australia and from Canada and all that great stuff. But you know, here I'm reaching people from India and from Indonesia and from Germany and from Australia. And I connected with somebody, not to make this about something else, but just to give a sense for, you know, what direction this is heading in. You know, I connected with a soldier from Israel who's fighting in the war, and he's a street photographer. So ultimately, Abruzzo becomes one of those places that I visit throughout the years. But what I'm interested in is doing what I do for Abruzzo, but kind of exploring the world doing that as well. So when the moment comes for Abruzzo, I'm on there, and I don't think my followers are going to go anywhere. They know if I'm going to Abruzzo, I will post stuff. I will go online, even though there's a conflict of interest with my family and all that. I know I'm going to do it. So I hope people give me, you know, just offer me a little bit of patience on their end while I'm trying to figure out this 2024 year to see what direction to go in. So.
Totally understandable. Yes. No, that's great. And we live in fortunate times that all this technology has happened, because otherwise, you know, it wouldn't
Oh
be.
yeah.
Yeah.
It's all coming together. So no,
Absolutely.
and I'm thankful for the interview. Again, forgive me. I think it was all over the place with this one.
No, Joe, it's very interesting. I appreciate your time. I appreciate what you do for our more specifically Abruzzese people. And Joe DiMeo, Abruzzo from the inside. It has been a pleasure.
Thanks,
Thank you for
Brian.
the interview, and keep doing all the good things you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.